This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Tomorrow marks the 30th anniversary of the day North Vietnamese troops took control of the city of Saigon, ending American involvement in the Vietnam War. Poet John Balaban had a unique view of the war. He was a conscientious objector who was given the job of ferrying wounded Vietnamese children to the U.S. for treatment and then back to their families. In the process, he got to know a lot about Vietnamese culture. He became particularly interested in a form of folk poetry known as Ca Dao. John Balaban is a poet in residence at North Carolina State University and joins us now. John, welcome.
Thank you.
What was it like to be a non-combatant American in Vietnam during the war?
Bewildering, because you are always out of it from everybody's perspective, including your own. And my job in particular took me out into the countryside all the time, but by myself. Often I was the only Westerner traveling on a bus into the Mekong Delta, the only Westerner on a ferry boat crossing the Mekong, the only Westerner walking down a dusty road to usually the parents of these children that we were taking to the United States.
What did those parents think of you?
Suspicious. I mean, often the children that we were treating were wounded by American arms in some way or another. So here they were suggesting to, what was I then, 23, to a young American who spoke faltering Vietnamese that we could do this or that at hospitals in the United States, including right here in the Triangle.
Did they know you were coming?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Yeah. We would try to send word ahead, but this was in a place where there weren't telephones and so on. And often if you did try to send word ahead, it meant going through the district police chief office, which would strike fear in the people you were trying to visit. So that often didn't work.
It's always tricky in an environment like that, especially across cultures, to know if you're getting the real deal or the straight, you know, story from folks. But could you get a sense from people in the countryside how they felt about Americans, how they felt about this war?
Opposed to the war, of course, because it was in their backyards. Whether they were opposed to their government in Saigon was another issue that I never really could tell for sure. People didn't talk politics. What we talked about were what could you really do for a child that had lost maybe not just one limb but three, or a child burned by napalm. We had to be accurate, because one thing Vietnamese could not possibly know is what American medicine could really do and the limitations. They thought we could do anything.
Now, when you returned with these children, I suspect then there was a far different reception. I mean, if you came
Those were miraculous moments. Yeah. You know, sometimes the villages would be so insecure that we'd have to go in with Black Hawk Marine helicopters. That would prepare well in advance. First of all, we had to find the family still existed, because we couldn't return a child to a village where the parents were gone. And then flying in by chopper, which often shot, you know, the door gunner sometimes opened up as we were flying in, not at the village, but at almost anything, sometimes just to shoot, you know, an elephant, you know, in the sugarcane field, a whale moving in the ocean, you know, it was mayhem.
So. Yeah.
But that's where I heard this poetry, this Ca Dao poetry that you mentioned. You know, sitting on a riverbank, a boat would go by. Sometimes you wouldn't even see the singer, maybe just the woman's leaf hat, and a song would be drifting out along with the putter of the engine, or sometimes waiting while these families would decide whether or not it was wise to send their child into our care. I'd be sitting in an orchard behind a house and hear a song, I thought. I didn't know what these things were at the time, you know, drifting from the orchard, maybe never even seeing the singer.
And we've talked about this poetry before on this program, but it goes back. It has a long tradition.
At least 1,000 years old. Yeah. And we can date it that far back, but it probably has another 1,000-year history to it.
And some of the songs have survived that long.
Some of the songs you can actually date because of things that are in the songs. In the year of the dragon, God sent down a flood. Well, you know how many years of the dragon cycles there were in that lunar calendar, and we know when the great floods were, and so you can date that song for 1918, for instance.
And but the other thing is they were still being written. They're very much a sort
Never
of a living
really
tradition.
Written. That's the interesting
or
thing.
Still being sung, I guess.
Composed, always by people who usually did not read or write, but who passed them down by song.
Right. And the fact that it was a living tradition, I guess that struck me too. It was still going on.
And
it's still happening. And, of course, the war wasn't new. The Americans' involvement began in earnest in the 60s with full-scale troop involvement. But they had been seeing this stuff go on, and foreigners on their soil for
right, and a lot of the
long time.
The range of the songs or what these poems can sing about is almost everything, including foreign wars, wars with foreigners.
You have one that talks a little bit about that. That talks about the French involvement in the French colonial experience in Vietnam.
Right. Yeah.
Tell us about that. Is it at the Exiled Kings River Pavilion?
Right. The titles are a bit bogus in that I put them all on, but the poem is famous, and it refers to King Zwi Tun. I guess the date would be the first decade of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Young king who was more or less being controlled by French keepers, who realized that and took his court of old mandarins to the jungle. They sneaked out of the capital and fled, and they were tracked down. I think it took about 3 years for the French secret police to find them. And the king then, of course, was exiled. And this poem was written during that time, a three-year period when people were wondering where the young king was.
Được bên
evening, and all around the king's pavilion, people are sitting, fishing, sad and grieving, loving, in love, remembering, waiting, watching. Whose boat plies the river mist, offering so many river songs that move these mountains and rivers, our nation? This was sung by an older man who had been a palanquin bearer, you know, someone that carries the sedan chair for a mandarin in the last imperial court in Vietnam. In fact, the man who's thumping and giving sort of stage directions to the singer was the mandarin himself, who was something like 80 years old at the time.
And you had actually finished your duties as a
civilian. Yeah, actually, and you went back. I got a regular discharge as a civilian conscientious objector, and I'd come home and I'd started teaching at Penn State. It was 1970, and it was very hard for anybody who had been to Vietnam to sit still. And the next year, 71, I took off with a tape recorder and did these.
How did people feel about you recording them?
That was no surprise. Just about everybody in Vietnam, in the countryside especially, knows these poems or some version of them or some repertoire of them. And they think they're important. They weren't surprised that an American would be curious about them. They thought it was a smart thing to be interested in them. So people were real welcoming with the tape recorder.
You've brought another recording with you, one that is particularly appropriate on this anniversary. Tell us about that one.
Well, this is either the fall of Saigon or the end of the American War, depending upon your perspective. And this is, again, an older person, a woman who was sitting on a platform above the Mekong with her Singer pedal sewing machine. When I came up, she had no idea I was walking up. And I asked the usual question, would you sing me your favorite song? And she sang this one. There are two couplets. The first is really a poem about remembering her mother when her mother was feeding her by, chewing up food and making it soft for her baby. And then it takes place on a pagoda island, and the pagoda bell rang. And I think the ringing of that bell caused her to add another couplet, actually a famous couplet, and make a new poem out of the two. Sad, idle, I think of my dead mother, her mouth chewing rice, her tongue removing fish bones. The red cloth drapes the mirror frame. Men of one country should love one another.
The Red Cloth, one of a collection of sung poems known as Ca Yao, in a collection of poetry called Ca Yao Vietnam by John Balaban. John, thank you.
Thank you.
John Balaban is poet in residence at North Carolina State University. His books include Locust at the Edge of Summer, New and Selected Poems, and a memoir of his years in Vietnam entitled Remembering Heaven's Face.